David led a full, wonderful, brilliant life. He wasn't the life of the party. David was the party. And you were always invited, come as you are. And if you were with David, you were the party. And the party, of course, was the celebration of the fullness of life. What was this celebration? The celebration was, first of all, as I've thought about it, a celebration was about engagement. He was engaged with people. He engaged with people quickly. He stood close to you. He had eye contact. He asked. He listened. He really listened. He's here. He wants to hear my story. He could be me. I could be him. He engaged with ideas. He engaged with his community. He engaged with his community locally. He engaged with his community globally. And his part of his celebration was in a raw engagement and involvement with life on every level. Another part of David's celebration was the simple pleasures of hearing a friend's voice, or the simple pleasures of cross-country skiing in the dark before work, or music, or dialogue, or picking berries, or the great things in life for free. So part of the celebration was simple pleasures. And of course, the major part of the celebration was humor. Although David took everything and everyone respectfully and with acceptance, David laughed at everything and anything, starting with himself. He never laughed against himself, but he laughed at himself, and that was his way. I think that in that sense, he felt like he pretty much had permission to laugh at anything, and he did. The first time I met David was when I was 21 on my arrival at Dartmouth Medical School. Literally, I was unpacking my bags and my trunk from a taxi, not knowing anything, not knowing anyone, full of hopes, full of fears, and walking towards the dorm, bounding towards me on the pathway, comes David, wearing old jeans, dirty, torn sneakers, and one of what I learned eventually, wearing one of his dozens or hundreds of tattered college sweatshirts. And only in thinking about it do I realize I don't remember a Dartmouth sweatshirt. That was probably the only one I never saw. And he reminded me of a puppy dog, a big mutt. He was affectionate, he was friendly, he was loyal, he was curious. And I loved him from the start, and as the years went by, my love for David just deepened. As I mentioned, nothing was sacred. Well, it took me a while to learn that with David, everything was sacred, but as far as joking went, nothing was sacred. And with a straight face, he'd make jokes with strangers. He'd make jokes with classmates. He'd make jokes at professors. He'd make jokes at deans. And I was embarrassed. I was terrified. I couldn't believe anybody could talk like this. And I still don't know how he got away with it. The only thing I can think of is that I think people didn't really believe they had just heard what they really had just heard. And of course, as time went by, I found myself thinking and talking like that. They say that you learn better when you're having fun, and I think this is why David was so damn smart. He was smart. As time went by, he was wise, but he was always smart. He knew something about everything. And if you were walking with him, he might say, he'd point out that the name of a painting, or look at that sculpture, or if you're listening to someone, listen to that. And he never used his knowledge competitively. It was always just amazement and delight. And with people, he could find common ground almost instantly. He knew something about everything. Maybe he visited your hometown. Maybe he visited your grandmother's village. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he had one of your old school sweatshirts. And another thing that I learned soon is that David was always doing something extra. In the evening, while people were done studying and students would be milling around relaxing before going to sleep, David would be at his old Grundig tape recorder, sending off a tape to a friend or sending off a tape to a family member. Or maybe he'd be listening to a tape that had just come from somebody in another country. Or maybe he'd be teaching himself Swedish by taking Swedish lessons on tape. And he was always doing something extra. In the first year of medical school, while we were working hard, he still had the time to organize a rural health project for the following summer. The second year of medical school, he had time to organize the presentation of the health project at Grand Rounds. In between, he was still studying hard. In between, he was still maintaining his friendships. And, of course, by the way, here and there, he'd sneak off and slowly but surely finish the pair of cross-country skis that he was making for himself. So he always had something going on. And, of course, as everyone knows, he was fun. And he was just plain fun. He was never boring. There was no such thing as small talk with David. If within seconds, he could cut to the chase of whatever it was. If you were talking about the weather, pretty soon it would be something like, look at those clouds. I wonder why the clouds here are like such and such. And I remember in South Dakota, they're like such and such. So there was no such thing as small talk. And he was a party of one. There were times when he'd start joking. He was just thinking aloud. He was talking aloud. And he'd go on and on, and those of us who knew him would sort of roll our eyes. Here he goes again. And everybody would be thinking to themselves, you know, not funny, you know, not laughing. Or maybe somebody would say, David, you forgot to take your medication this morning. And he would roll on. He didn't care if you were laughing. As a matter of fact, he didn't care if you were listening. And sooner or later, maybe it wasn't the third joke, maybe it was the fifth joke, maybe finally he'd roll the eighth or ninth joke, and pretty soon he had you. And you were laughing uncontrollably, whether you planned to or not. And I remember one random comment just after David and Pat got married, when he got the puppy, and he was it Abby? Yeah, and he was explaining to me about how he got the puppy, and his explanation was really simple. He said, well, Pat and I were hoping for a dog, and all of our parents were hoping for a baby, so we compromised. We got a baby dog. And during the famous summer of 1969, the Rural Health Project summer, David and friends house sat for a professor, Malin Hoagland, and his wife, Ollie, while they were doing the Rural Health Project, and Malin and Ollie were traveling. And David came to consider Malin and Ollie his true friends, and he came to consider the Hoagland home as his own home. And Malin and Ollie came back shortly before school started, and at the end of the summer, briefly, the students and the professor and his wife lived together in the home. And at that point, for him, in David's eyes, Malin and Ollie were not just wonderful friends, but in his mind, they were contemporaries. So it was with his usual affection and enthusiasm that he proudly invited Malin to an end-of-the-summer party. He says, Malin, you got to come to this party this weekend. It's going to be great. We're going to have swimming. There's going to be music, there's going to be beer, there's going to be great food. And Professor Hoagland said, well, thanks, Dave. Where is it? And he goes, well, oh my God, it's at your place. So for all of us whose lives were so touched by knowing David, maybe this is the lesson of how he touched us. The party is at your place. The party is at my place. He invited us to celebrate the joys of life that are our birthright. And human warmth and engagement. This is in you, and this is in me. In the simple pleasures of a friend's voice, or a letter, or a phone call, or a photo in the mail, or a cup of tea, a conversation. These are in you and me. Finding a way to roll up your sleeves and work on something, or create something, or solve something. These are in you and me, and perhaps these are the ways that we celebrate David's life. And indeed, the party is at our place. The party is at your place. The party is at my place. And David was crazy about Pat. He knew how lucky he was to have such a great partner. And nothing in his abundant and joyful life gave him more joy than being a dad to Katie and Ben. And if he were here now, you know, David would share our sadness and he would understand that our hearts were broken. But let's face it, by now he would have moved on to cracking jokes. Maybe not the third or the fifth, but by the eighth or ninth, he would have had us laughing whether we planned to or not. And David did lead a fabulous life. Like the things I read in the paper, he led a dazzling life, a sparkling life, a magical life. And if time were measured by human warmth, if time were measured by simple pleasures, if time were measured by good deeds, then David lived to be 150. So, for now, goodbye, David, my lovely, beautiful friend. And if this worldly life is the whole story, thanks for a wonderful celebration. And if it turns out there's more to the story, I get great comfort in knowing that the next party is at your place. So.
Thank you, Lou.